Intrathecal therapy in this 88-year-old man. Chris, agree?
Well, I think it's challenging. One, I think with anybody with disease that close to his CNS, you want to at least sample his CSF to know whether or not he's got CNS involvement. Clearly, if he's got CNS involvement, he's likely to become symptomatic from that CNS involvement, and you're going to need to treat it. CNS prophylaxis is a difficult topic for diffuse large B-cell as a whole, and one that we could have a whole separate session debating. And an 88-year-old guy, I think one of the things I'd have to think about is, what are you prophylaxing him for? And presumably that's to prevent CNS relapse at some point down the road. If you think that your therapy is palliative at best, then I would be less inclined to do CNS prophylaxis.
But we were taking the tack that this wasn't palliative. I mean, granted he was 88. Since we were treating him with curative intent, and it only takes one case. I mean, I've seen two in the last 10 years of maybe not 88, but over 80, who relapse, and when you see CNS relapse, it's within the first 12 to 18 months. It's horrible. It's very difficult to salvage anybody, much less an older. So there's not data to support it, obviously, in this age group, and you could argue, well, should we give intravenous methotrexate instead of intrathecal? We just didn't think he could tolerate that. I've typically done that more in patients who warrant for over more than one extra nodal in LDH, but we just decided this was kind of the best of both worlds, so to speak.
Mike, any thoughts about CNS prophylaxis in general and this man in particular?
Well, so in general, we certainly do use it for the usual indications, and this would certainly be an indication for it. I mean, I think there's a chance of curing this patient, but in the fact that we know now that he got through his therapy pretty well, that, you know, is better than I would have expected up front. But typically for somebody this age, we tend not to use intrathecal, but we're, you know, up to probably into the 70s, you know, we would certainly do it. And we tend to use 2 to 3 cycles of high-dose IV methotrexate, sort of integrated about day 14 of, say, the odd-numbered cycles. If they're negative up front, sort of as Jeremy Abramson reported in Cancer, I think, July of 2010. But, you know, older patients, especially once you get past your mid-60s, upper 60s, high-dose methotrexate is not easy and can be quite toxic. So you have to be very cautious about that. But anyway, we tend to use that because there's a fairly high frequency of parenchymal relapse, not just leptomeningeal. So you sort of cover both things. With that, you don't do the LPs then.
Julie, any myths or misperceptions that you see about the whole issue of CNS prophylaxis and community-based oncology?
Well, I would say that a lot of people don't get it who should get it, number one. And there is still the issue of, does IT really work or not? And that's an unanswered question. So similar to Mike, if they can tolerate it, we probably would do the IV methotrexate on day 10 to 14. There's not that, you know, a patient like this wouldn't be able to tolerate it, I don't think. So I would have given him IT as well.
And when you say that people maybe aren't using anything, what are your usual indications, and are there any in particular that you see people not sort of responding to?
So we typically would use IT methotrexate once with each cycle of R-CHOP, and the indications would be kind of orbital lymphoma, sinus lymphomas, anything in the neuroaxis, paravertebral areas. We typically use it for testicular lymphoma. We use it for... Some people would say if there's bone marrow involvement and or high IPI, that that would be an indication. We typically haven't done that, but there are a lot of places that do that. So,
Chris?
Yeah, I think this is exactly the situation where I would give intrathecal therapy if I were to give it. I just have concerns about giving it in an 88-year-old gentleman. I mean, often when I have these kinds of discussions with patients, I talk to them about what their life expectancy was from birth. And for a guy who's 88, he's probably getting close to that or maybe past his life expectancy from birth. And so you need to weigh that in line with how aggressive to be about his therapy with prophylaxis and other things.
Just kind of curious, John, do you agree with Julie's kind of impression that it's underutilized?
I'm a bit more of a nihilist about intrathecal or just CNS prophylaxis in general. We looked several years ago at the SWOG old intergroup trial before rituximab, which, you know, was the CHOP versus promacitabam versus other regimens. Two of them happened to have CNS active therapy and two of them didn't. So it was sort of an opportunity in a randomized way to take a look. And there were potentially problems with some coding of data and so forth. But the bottom line was we weren't able to show that the CNS relapse rate was significantly modified by the routine inclusion of CNS prophylaxis. So certainly I don't think all patients should get it. The event is too low. So the question is, are there subgroups of patients where you know the risk is high enough where it's at least worth trying something? And certainly I think for testicular lymphoma, I do it. And for some of the other situations that Julie described, I do it. But I don't feel so inclined to do it because I certainly agree with Andy, it's a devastating outcome. The problem is we have no real evidence that we're mitigating that outcome with these interventions. And it seems like we should be, except that, you know, we're also potentially causing harm. And therefore, my attitude is in these situations, I'll often do it. But if there's any contraindication like age 88, I'm certainly comfortable not doing it.
And doing being intrathecal or IV?
I generally use intrathecal. The one scenario where we've routinely given IV, and this is sort of our group decided, was in the testicular situation where so many of the recurrences are parenchymal. We figured if we're going to do something, that intravenous methotrexate is the way to go.
Subsequent to this think tank reporting, additional findings from the CLL-11 trial of obinutuzumab were reported in a press release which stated, quote, at a pre-planned interim analysis, an independent data monitoring committee determined that the study met its primary endpoint, reporting that obinutuzumab with chlorambucil significantly improved progression-free survival compared to rituximab with chlorambucil. Final data from this study will be submitted to the American Society of Hematology's 55th annual meeting in December 2013. This concludes our program. Special thanks to our participating faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special Clinical Investigator Think Tank on Lymphomas and CLL.